You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
A very warm welcome to Sturkers and Radar Uncut, our monthly podcast brought to you by Ping.
Play your best, your very best.
Radar, what a few weeks it has been in the world of golf. I think it's fair to say we've got plenty to discuss today. And we also, ladies and gentlemen, have a very, very special guest. All will be revealed in the not too distant future. Just to remind you as well, do check us out on social at Sturkers Radar on Twitter and Sturkers and Radar Pod on Insta. If you fancy dropping us an email, you can as well, sturkersandradarpod@gmail.com. But Radar, first of all, let us start with the US Open. Now, before we get into Matt Fitz, before we get into the drama and how unbelievable that Sunday was at that major championship, just a word on Brookline as a venue. It looked incredible on TV. How special was it to walk those fairways?
One of the best golf courses, Sarah, I've ever seen. It was very much like your Sunningdale, your Wentworth type thing. It was generous off the tee for US Open standards. The greens were firm, just what you would expect, and fast. It stole the show. Well, we know who stole the show, but the golf course, I tell you what, it lived up to its billing of being just a sensational place to play. It isn't a big golf course, but look, they will go back there. It was magnificent. It truly was a great US Open.
It was, and we had all the drama on Sunday. I know you're a big fan of Matt Fitzpatrick. We've been watching his progress. We had Billy Foster, his caddy, on the podcast last month. We'll get to that shortly. But how pleased were you to see one of the hardest workers in the game of golf, after all the recent form he's shown, quality player, finally break through and win his first major championship?
He's just an incredible talent, just... And I didn't know he logged every shot of his whole life. I didn't know that. And to have the discipline to do that, you know, back in our day, you wouldn't go, you know, back to the room and log your shots. You go down to the bar and have a few beers and crack on. And, you know, you wouldn't be logging stuff. And that's what he does. Look, he just does it his own way. He swings the club so very well. When we spoke to Billy last time, he says he's put on 20 yards. He certainly has. I mean, he was out driving DJ. He got in by 30 down 15 one day, which I broadcasted out. I couldn't believe it. DJ's going in there with a 9-iron, and if Flip Fitz is hitting wedge. I mean, it was just unreal. He looks to me like he's put on like a stone in weight, which is holding in good stead. When he first came out, he was built like a jockey. He was built like Frankie Dettori. And he was a thin little guy. He looked like the only thing he didn't have was a magic wand, because he looked like Harry bloody Potter.
I've always remembered, I've heard you say this about Matt Fitz before. You know, you're like, he looks about in the nicest possible way, because he's such a, I love him to bits. He's such a good guy. He's so personal. You say he looks about 16, doesn't he?
He still does. Maybe let's hope he ages quickly when he gets to about 40, because we're going to meet him if he gets 60 and he looks about 30.
It's brilliant. He doesn't look any older when he first came out on tour. He's youthful good looks. Yeah. So what about this bunker shot then on 18? It will go down in the history books. I think he's already watched it about 25,000 times since that victory on Sunday. It's been played. News outlets, sports outlets, in the media, it was a shot for the ages. But you were confident he could pull it off.
Yeah. Yeah, I went up there obviously before he hit it in that bunker, and he there was a little tongue sticking out, and the lie was great, and he just had enough room to whip the club from out to in around the lip, and the way he swings the club, he's quite flat, and he has this amazing power now. And there are a lot of golfers would get there and they couldn't have played it. I would have said, no, this guy can't do this. But he could. He was just one of those. 16 greens after 17 holes, he'd already hit in regulation.
Yeah.
So he's feeling it. He really is. And I just said, yeah, no, I honestly believe he can do this. And he didn't let me down. It was, you know, it was probably a silly call for me. That, you know, when you make a brave statement as a broadcast on-course commentator, you don't seem to want to do it at the US Open on the 72nd hole. Like, I could have been standing there naked in the middle of the fairway if it didn't come off and he slammed it into the lip. You know what I mean? But I just knew he was up for it because he's at the top of his game right now. And it looks like he's going to get better in my eye.
You've never made a bad call in your life, Radar.
Yeah, well.
Always bang on.
Geez, I love you.
It was amazing, though, wasn't it? How much, you know, I know, again, you've followed him, you've walked plenty of rounds with Matt Fitz. How much does he kind of, you talk about the diligence, how much does he kind of maybe engage with you on the golf course during his career?
No, he's not one of those guys. He's very much, he's polite. He'll come up and say, "G'day, Radar, how you doing? How's things? You all right? Yeah." And I'll go, blah, blah, blah. And we might shoot the breeze for 20 seconds. But then he goes back to his job, which I respect. I don't want, most of the golfers usually come up to me on the fairways. It doesn't matter who it is, Tiger, Spieth, it doesn't matter who. Usually it's cup, but they'll come up for a whinge. It's not really to go, "How's your mother's chickens, Radar? You know, how's everything going?" It's not like that. It's more, you know, when someone's out driving them or the wind got up or whatever, they'll come over and have a little wine, and I don't mind that. I find that quite entertaining that I'm their agony aunt.
Yeah, well, what an agony aunt you are. Do you know what, then? It's been great to hear your perspective, your thoughts, as you sort of recount and look back at what was an amazing Sunday at the US Open. Do you know what? Should we hear from the man himself?
Can we?
We can.
Yeah.
Very special guest, ladies and gentlemen. Delighted to say that we are joined by the US Open winner, Matt Fitzpatrick. Well, Matt, thank you so much for joining us. And first things first, many congratulations. What an unbelievable performance. And I'm delighted that you are sitting talking to us on Stirkus and Radar as a major champion. So many congratulations from his birth. Both, obviously, Radar was out with you, so he saw it and up close and personal. I was watching on TV. It was just incredible. So come on, first things first, couple of weeks on, how is life treating you as a major winner?
Thank you, yeah. Yeah, it's different. It just feels different, you know. It's, I mean, I've not stopped smiling since two Sundays ago, so... yeah, it's just been a complete whirlwind. Everything's been 100 mile an hour, but you know, you wouldn't change it at all.
You said at the time, quite a few interviews, and obviously you've been doing the rounds in terms of media, so we do appreciate you putting us in your media requirement list as well. But you said that it felt better than you thought it would. Has that been the case for the last couple of weeks as well? It's kind of blown your mind in terms of how good it feels.
Yeah, I would say so. It's felt 10 times better than I ever thought it would for whatever reason. I think just for me, looking back, I spoke to a few people about it, and I think just the work that I feel like I've put into my game and in improving just over the whole course of my career, just, you know, that's what we try and that's what we play for, to win majors. And I think because I did it, it just feels that much better, that the hard work paid off. And I think that's why it was kind of, it just completely different.
Look, we're going to get on to sort of the work and some of the distance, the speed work. I want to sort of pick your brains about that. And obviously the professional, the diligence that a lot of golfing aficionados have mentioned. But I know Radar just wants to say congratulations to you as well and have a quick word.
No, absolutely fantastic. It was some of the best. I didn't know you hit that many greens until we got to the last bunk of that. And I looked at it and then all of a sudden, what am I hitting every green? He's missed one green or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Really, has the game has come a long way, man. I mean, have you put on a little bit of weight, like a stone, maybe?
A little bit. I mean, I measure myself in kilograms, so I've been like 72 kilograms forever, to be honest. But this year probably got up to like 74, but it's not I wouldn't say it's made a massive difference, you know, to that. That's not been the difference maker, is what I'm trying to say.
No, and you're moving it out there with that driver, absolutely fantastic. Now, I'm gonna ask you one more question. Being the ultimate professional that you are, how are you going to go about the tournaments leading, the Scottish you're playing, the Open? How are you going to deal with that? Because the adulation is going to be phenomenal. You know that. Have you already thought about all that?
Not really, no. I'm trying to take it a day at a time, to be honest. It's, you know, just I'm trying to kind of get organised these next 2 weeks and get a plan together, kind of get everything out in front of me so I know where I'm going, know what I'm doing each day. I learned something good off Danny Willett, funnily enough. I remember back when he won the Masters, and I think I asked him he wanted to play nine holes or something on a Wednesday, and he said, yeah, no problem. I've not got any media. He was like, I make sure that I do all my media before or any commitments before and say no to anything on Wednesday, which I thought was really good in the fact that, you know, that Wednesday gives him that time to go and practice, to go and do whatever he needs to do, even if it's have a day off, for example. So I thought that was quite good. So, you know, it's something that I'll look to do similar. Sometimes it's not always that easy, but like I say, I think just the key is just to be really well organized and just manage your time well.
Oh, I think you'll be just fine. Just where's the trophy?
The trophy is right there.
Hey. Oh my goodness. Hey, knowing you, Matt, that's what is it, full of Ribena or something? Yeah.
No. Do you know what? I've not actually had a drink out of it yet, which I feel like I should have, but I'm going on holiday after the Open, and it's coming with me because I'm going straight from holiday back to the US. So I think it might get a little bit of a drink then.
Matt, just coming on, you know, Reno's talked about there a little bit of, you know, sort of talking about the distance. And I know a lot's been made in the media and you've talked about it, and obviously the distance that you've added. And I know you've talked a bit about the speed work. Can you just, I just think this is fascinating, the kind of the work you've put in and the yardage you've now added. And our viewers and our listeners will be intrigued to know a little bit more. Can you just go into that in a bit more depth as to how, you say, oh yeah, I've added 20 yards, 30 yards, whatever. But honestly, what work has gone into that? How have you physically done that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to give away all the secrets, obviously, but I work with a guy called Sasha McKenzie, and he's been in close contact with my coach, Mike Walker. And, you know, in working with my trainer as well, Matt Roberts. So those three have kind of had really good lines of communication these last 2 years. Sasha came at the end of 2020 to see me in Florida, and he had this new product called the Stack, which is like a speed stick, but you can change the weights. And I've been using it ever since. Literally, I used it for 2020 right till the summer of 21. And then I stopped using it. I had a couple of injuries, had a few other things going on, and it just kind of slipped away from me, and didn't think anything of it. Didn't play very well in the summer, kind of got it back towards the end of the year, then started playing well again, and then hit it really hard at the start of this year. And I looked at the end of last year, my stats basically said my driving literally got worse once I stopped doing that. Not only distance, but, you know, the accuracy as well, the strokes gained. Because for me, it's not just the speed that it gives me. I feel like it's the control as well. I feel like I can, you know, I own the club and I can move it how I want rather than the other way around. And basically, since I've been doing it again, you know, we've had a really good run with it. I've worked on it really, really hard. And yeah, it's paid off. And it's strange because I feel like, as crazy as it sounds, it's almost happened overnight, because I played with Shane Lowry in Canada. And for what, the week before, and for whatever reason, like, I played with Shane plenty of times, but for whatever reason that week, I remember me and him talking about it. We were like, I was a bit surprised, but I was just hitting it so far. Mm-hmm. And then get to Brookline and I was hitting it past DJ for the first two rounds as well. And I was like, I honestly, I was like, where the hell's this come from? And I was loving it, obviously, but it's all kind of, I don't know, I guess my body just figured it out and kind of went with it. But yeah, it's taken time, but it's paid off so far.
But that it's incredible, because physically you've made that change. You've had a game plan. You said, right, I want to do this. You found a system that works. Like you said, your body's adapted. How instrumental has that been in the standard you've now achieved, the recent run of form and becoming a major champion, but also the, like you said, you know, you're hitting it past DJ, that confidence that it gave you that week to think everything's there, everything's in place, and I've worked so hard to make this happen.
Yeah, I think particularly in line with the fact that I've had success at Brookline before, I think just both all those things coming together, it was like the perfect week. It's really cliche, but it was literally a dream week. It's a golf course I feel comfortable. It's a golf course that I love playing on. I've won around there. All of a sudden, I'm hitting it really, really well this year. And yeah, I'm just, yeah, doing it all clicked. And it's funny, I said to Billy early in the year, we had moments where I'd play well with, you know, driving, short game, approach play be really good, and the putter would be off, or the putter, short game, and approach would be off, and driving, just one of the four aspects of the game just wasn't there. And that week, it was just everything was on, and it all clicked.
Matt, we're going to talk about the bunker shot on the last.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, I stood in there and Fax was talking and he says, oh, this looks like he's going to punch it out. I went, no. I said, no, he can do this. And you know why? Because the way you are swinging the club and what you've described, the speed, you can only, not everyone could have played the shot, and you know that. And the speed that you possess right now helped amazingly to be able to miss that tongue, send it so far left and slice it back behind the flag.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've said, obviously, in a lot of the media that fairway, I've not been great in fairway bunkers at all this year. Like, I've been really poor, and it's something Billy's been on at me for a while to improve. And I've practiced it. You know, the club that I'm at, the Grove in Florida, they have a fairway bunker, and I've spent plenty of time in there and hit loads of shots out of it. And even there, just struggled, not necessarily getting it right. So yeah, there's no doubt about it. I was low on confidence going into that shot. But for me, for whatever reason, I just feel like it was completely natural ability. Whatever it was, it just took over and they hit the shot. I said to someone else, I've not hit that much shape on a shot in, you know, probably in 6 months to 12 months. I couldn't believe when I looked up, I thought it'd come out straight. I didn't think I'd hit any fade, and it wasn't just fading, it was like slicing. It was, you know, and at the time people were like, is that the best shot you ever hit? And I thought, yeah, you know, it was a good shot. But now I really look back and had the time to reflect on it, I'm like, it's the best shot I've ever hit in my life, there's no doubt about it.
You'll never forget that shot.
Never.
You know, it wasn't in the monthly medal at your local club in Sheffield, big fella. It's the 72nd hole of the US Open.
Yeah.
And go out and do similar to Sandy Lyle's shot, a better shot than Sandy's. I love you, Sandy, but, you know, you're in the middle of the bunker. What we've got is we've got a shot there that was just, we'll never forget it, and you certainly won't.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Matt, I think also, you know, I watch when somebody's in position, all comes down to nerves, all comes down to pressure. Guys trying to win a major championship for the very first time. I'm always fascinated. I'm really into sports psychology. So I always watch the body language. I'm looking at the dialogue between player and caddy. I'm just watch really closely, like the breathing and just, you know, how a player looks, maybe a little nervous twitches or anything like that. Just talk to us, honestly, how you were feeling in that moment. You know, you said earlier, it was the perfect week. I felt good. I felt calm. But in the last couple of holes, just what were you saying to yourself? What were you and Billy saying without, you know, revealing again everything? But
no, sure.
How comfortable were you in that position at that time?
For me, like there's been so much going on in that aspect. You know, I feel like I concentrate really hard on the golf course. I feel like I'm very focused. Lots of people give me abuse because I should smile more, apparently. But I'm just, you know, I'm just concentrating. Like I don't say that to them in the office, do I? So,
and we know.
So you know, so there's a bit of that, and then, but those last few holes in particular, I felt all week, like I say, given how comfortable I was, that I could win. You know, I backed myself that I could win. Particularly the experience from the USPGA, I looked back at. I didn't really have time to sort of give it a full reflection of it, to be honest, but. I guess kind of in the moment you think back to, oh, well, what did I do when I was in this position? And I kind of just rolled with it, really. And for me, I felt like the USPGA, everything was, looking back, it was all a bit quick and it was a bit rushed. And I can think of moments when I was with Billy where I hit shots at the USPGA on Sunday and I didn't ask him where the wind was. You know, I just assumed where it was from the hole before or the shot before, and that's not, you know, that's not good enough in those moments. And to me, I look back at Sunday and every single shot we hit that needed discussing over, every single one, we didn't get one wrong, not one routine was broken, everything was perfect. And coming down those last few holes, I just felt so comfortable with my swing off the tee with my irons. I just felt confident really in what I had, and I think probably look like the last few holes, other than me laughing my head off on 17 because I had the world's fastest putt, other than that I didn't really show much like laughing and joking. Like, I showed more emotion than I've ever shown in a tournament, I would say, but I think that's also because of my link there and just what it meant.
Yeah, the thing is, you're the US Open champion because of pure talent, and you should be wheeling your ghoulies around in a wheelbarrow.
Okay, I'll note that. I'll bring a wheelbarrow to Scotland for you, Radar.
Tell me.
And you know, Radar, we were having a bit of a conversation before Matt joined us live and at the top of the podcast, and everybody kind of in the golfing world has been saying this and well documented on social media. Your kind of professionalism, your diligent approach, the fact you've noted down every shot. Lots been made of that, hasn't it, Matt? In the last sort of 12 years, you've written down every shot that you've hit in practice and in tournament play. A lot of that, I'm sure, is your personality. It's innate. You were born with it. But how dedicated have you been to your chosen sport over the last 20 years, you know, 15, 20 years to enable you to get to this point? How much, let's be honest, bloody hard work has gone into you now sitting there being a major winner?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'll be brutally honest. Like, I'd say that I hate to be this person, but yeah, I'm going to take it while
I'm open. Go on, you can say whatever you like.
Yeah, I would say I'm easily top three hardest workers on tour. Yeah, I just feel like, A, because of the way my game is in general, kind of growing up, I've never been the longest, and just kind of that, you know, I don't give off the look that I can, you know, compete and play well. So I think that kind of is a mental thing for me, that it's like, well, you know, I'm going to show them and this is how to do it. And it's something that my mom and dad told me when I was younger, you know, if you want to get somewhere, you got to work hard for it. And, that is, you know, that is the recipe for success, and that's what I really truly believe in. If you want to get something, you really do have to work hard, and it's not just about hitting 1,000 balls a day. I think that's something I've learned over the last 3 years, really, as well. It is being smart with your practice, and you know, rest is important and practice is important. It's just finding that balance, and it's a constant spinning plates. And I have a bigger team than probably most guys on tour, and I think that's also a big help, because I can obviously separate everything to all the different parts of the team, and just help me be more organized and manage all the situations. And I think that's been a big thing, is just being organized with what to work at and when to work at it and what's specific. And I think because of that, on top of me just wanting to win all the time and wanting to work hard to achieve what I want to achieve, it's worked out well. And you know, looking at it now, it kind of feels right that at this point in my career, it's kind of the peak point, I guess, and ended up with a US Open trophy.
Amazing. Radar, isn't that, you've said, you're not just saying that because he's here with us now. You've been a massive fan of Matt for a long time. As a guy, as well as a player. How nice is it just to hear that? And, you know, all the players, Rory, talking about, you know, your hard work, how that's paid off. But Ray, I know you're a big fan of that kind of diligent approach, and it's nice to hear a guy talking about it so humbly as well.
Yeah, well, I don't see why saying you're one of the hardest workers in the world is big-headed. I just don't get it. You know, that's what you've got to do. Yeah. Some guys don't have to, and some guys do. And that's, well, he's found the mixture. He's found the, you know, the recipe, and that's, and it won't stop. It's just one of those things. He'll keep on working, and, you know, that's why people, some people win. You know, you get some guys who are a little more natural and it comes to them. Do they get the success that Matt's had already? I don't know, but you know, to watch him, you can win. You win around that golf course in that US Open. You can win around any golf course. That's the simple. That is a stern test there at Brookline.
So what about the goal now, Matt? How have things changed? I know you're going to sit down with your team. I know you're going to obviously plan and work out and look ahead. But honestly, now what? What are we going to see from Matt going forward in terms of major championships?
Yeah, so, I mean, listen, I up until the PGA, I'd never really competed in one. So I'd never really been in, within touching distance of any of winning any. So obviously it's, you know, I wouldn't say it's come as a surprise, but there's things change now. All of a sudden there's another level of expectation. Obviously more demands on my time for a short period of time. And I think the big thing is just trying to, in my opinion, and you know, I'm always looking to get better. And it's in this situation, it's speaking to other major winners. You know, what did you do that you felt was good? What did you do that was bad? And you know, speaking to Billy and my coaches and my managers and Mark Steinberg, I do some work with, and speaking to him, how he's handled major championship winners before, and just to me, it's also like it's a big learning thing. And I might get it right straight away. I might not get it right. It's just one of those things, but I've just got to keep, as stupid as it sounds, I just want to try and keep life the same as much as possible and do what I've been doing to get me where I am. And I think that's, I just got to make sure that I don't lose sight of that and try and, I'm not that I am going to change anything. Well, I don't know why you would, but, it just all goes back to managing time, I think, and just trying to use it wisely.
Matt, we're talking, one of the most impressive things about your win was I was with you at Southern Hills as well. And that was only a few weeks prior. And that didn't work out the way you planned it. How much did you draw off that Sunday at Southern Hills in the PGA for your win at the US Open?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I had that question a few times since and people, you know, have you reflected? And it was I had such a short week off, and then I was gone again. I never really had a chance to sit down and kind of look at it and what did I do wrong? What did I do right? And I think just in like the heat of the moment in, you know, in Canada or in the US Open itself, just thinking back to the USPGA, okay, what happened here? Like I said, the whole routine of me and Billy and me asking the wind every time and keeping to the same routine and not missing any details out and really thinking, okay, well, where's the best place to miss it? Where's the best place to hit it? You know, I can think of the 10th hole in particular for me and Billy spoke about it after the USPGA, the 10th hole at Southern Hills on Sunday. It was kind of in between clubs, but the flag was back left. And we went with if the ball had come out normal, it was the right club, but we kind of didn't really, it was kind of a bit of a, looking back, a bit of like a half-assed effort, in my opinion, on the club. Like, I was just hoping it was going to come out right, and I don't know what Billy was thinking. Anyway, it comes out a flyer, goes long, didn't go up and down. So that, you know, it's just a simple one like that, and then you take it into the next hole, another bogey. So I look back at that afterwards, and I was like, A, I didn't even think about where the best miss was. B, I didn't even ask where the wind was. And like, the other thing is, it's, you can't be like half into the shot, half out of the shot. It's, you know, it's got to be full commitment. And we've talked about it, me and Billy, since we look at the final round of the US Open, you know, we didn't get one thing wrong. And you know, I didn't really hit one bad shot other than maybe, well, two or three bad shots, and fortunately they didn't cost me anything. But that was the difference. It was like, everything was committed to on the Sunday at the US Open, and it was full routine and it was normal, and you know, there was nothing that kind of went wrong. Whereas Southern Hills, it got off to a rough start, and then it was like, shit, I was chasing my tail, along with not necessarily being as focused or taking my time as much as I could have. And I think that's what was the difference at US Open.
Amazing, just the perfect summer. Matt, we're running out of time. I have to let you go pretty soon, but we must just say this. You mentioned Billy a lot. He's a good friend of ours. Obviously, he was on our podcast the last month before this one. Looking ahead, obviously, after the PGA, looking ahead to the US Open. I'm not going to put you on the spot and say, did you listen to our podcast? I'm just going to play the little clip. This is what Billy had to say talking ahead of the US Open.
He was 48th in the world when I started with him 3.5 years ago, and he's currently 15th, and he's only going one way. He's driving the ball 20 yards further than what he was 18 months ago, and he started chipping cack-handed. I mean, I hate the look of it. Having worked for Seve for 5 years, I think it's an absolute strange thing to look at, but I'll tell you what, his chipping has come on like you can't believe. So we all know he puts well, and he drives the ball well. So with him getting that bit longer, I think he's turning into a proper player, and you could well see this lad with majors, and I'm sure it won't be long before he's competing again. It might be well as, you know, it could be the US Open in 3 weeks' time. He could feature again. He's playing that well.
He's like a mind reader, isn't he?
I want the lottery numbers, Fitz.
Yeah, exactly.
How cool is that, though?
Yeah, that's funny. It's great. I mean, it's funny because we've had, I wouldn't say we've been close to winning this year, maybe once or twice, I think. We've never really been really, really in the mix. And every time it's not really gone our way, you know, he says the same thing, just keep doing what you're doing, it's going to come up. You know, he said himself, you know, it's, you know, I don't know if he wants to keep it private, it's now not private, but he said to me, you know, you're going to do big things, it's going to happen, it's going to come at the right time, and it came at the best time. Yeah.
He's a top lad, isn't he, Billy boy? You two have formed a great partnership, but he's such, I was so happy for him, you know, top lad, amazing caddy.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Listen, Matt, it's been an absolute pleasure. We really appreciate you joining us on Stokers and Trader. Thank you so much for your time. And good old Yorkshire boy, you're not going to change one bit, are you, Matt? Now that you're a major winner, you're still going to be Matt, lovely guy, chatting to the media and obviously, you know, big fan's favourite as well. So you're not going to get too big for your boots.
No, we brought back down to it.
Billy will give him a slap.
Exactly. Got it in one.
Oh, fantastic to have Matt with us. Radar, what a superstar. Like, I genuinely meant what I said there. You've spoken to him a bunch, followed him. You've been out, walked fairways with him. I've spoken to him plenty of times in the media. He's one of the nicest guys on tour, isn't he? And he won't change one bit.
No, he's an amazing, a lovely guy. I mean, he just truly is. But, you know, he's a devil on that golf course. I mean, get him out there in his office. You know, you don't want to mess with Matt Fitzpatrick out on the golf course now. I mean, we've seen him win over there on the Earth course at the DP World in Dubai twice on a big golf course. We knew what he could do, but now he's showing us on the biggest of big stages. He's this is going to be great for golf to have someone like this.
Amazing. Right.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let's move on to Radar's rants and what's irked me or what's stoked me. What's been getting your goat this month, Radar?
Well, I'm hearing some whispers that there are a few players on this LIV Tour. Look, I've got nothing really against the LIV Tour, nothing. But if you are going to go. You know, that's fine. Off you go. But don't come back and start screaming when you're not allowed to play on any other tour because you have joined this tour. Don't do that. And I'm hearing whispers right now that there are some guys thinking, well, I thought I could go to the LIV Tour and I could play a few here on your tour, whether it be the PGA Tour or the DP World Tour. No, that isn't the case yet. Whether they all get together and they work out dates, we don't know. but I don't like that. Look, you can't go and sign for Manchester United and the next week go and play for Man City, can you?
No.
No, it's not happening. You want to go? Well, good. Go and get your coin and play some golf and enjoy yourself. But don't whinge when you can't come back.
I agree. And look, we're going to talk more about Liv in a minute, but I just wanted to, I hope you agree with me on this, because there's been quite a lot in social media in terms of what's been irking me. Lynn Graham, did you watch that performance, Scandinavian Mix?
Yes.
It was incredible. Making history, winning, becoming the first woman to win on the DP World Tour. Of course, it was co-sanctioned with the LET. Same course, same prize fund, nine-shot victory. And some people have not been giving her enough credit or moaning and talking about whinging because the men and the women play different tees. What I don't understand that rationale, that thinking radar. Men and women, physiologically different. The course was set up to reflect this. Body weight, strength, muscle mass, force generation, bone density, all these things, we are different. And yet somehow, because she was playing different tees to the men, that didn't really count. Will you back me up on this?
Well, it's
because what she did...
Look, I'm a big fan. I watched that Sunday and I thought it was absolutely magnificent. She's a ping player. I'm trying to get her on a round with Radar, you know, and I think she's going to come to the party. And it's like, I want to play golf with her. I know she's going to outdrive me, but I'm an old fella now, you know? But I, you know, whatever, if she wins by 9 shots, she wins by 2 shots, she loses by 3 shots. It doesn't matter. What happened on that Sunday in Sweden, in Henrik and Annika's event, was, it's great for golf. Yeah, there's too much whinging in our game. It's not going to happen the week where the ladies and the men are going to play together. It's going to happen a few times a year, which is great for our game. And anything that's great for our game, I'm all for.
I just couldn't believe that people took that performance, didn't give her the credit she deserves because they were playing different tees. But why, in what stratosphere should men and women be playing from the same tees?
That's right. That's right. It is what it is. I hate that saying, but it is. I mean, there it is. You won by nine. She's a champion. No one's ever done that before. And, you know, I think there's room for bigger tournaments with men and ladies playing together. I've always said, I've done it on our show here, I think the World Cup of Golf should come back and it should be one man and one lady together playing for their respective countries. I've said that before on Circus and Radar. And yeah. I buy it. I think there is room for ladies and men. The Australian Open Golf this year is playing the Australian Open ladies and the Australian Open men's together. That's the first. That's massive. And I'm all for it. I'm all for change. Unless it doesn't work, of course. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But that tournament in Sweden, it worked. It was awesome.
It was awesome. And thank you for backing me up. Because, a lot of people, she got a lot of plaudits, a lot of people congratulating her on a sensational performance. But there were some people who, yeah, like you said, liked to whinge and took something away from what she achieved because of the situation. But, right, coming back to Liv then, we saw the first event at Centurion. They've got some big names, haven't they? They really have. They're ramping up the player names. A lot of big players have gone. Bryson, obviously Brooks now. Where's this going? And have you heard any more rumours about other superstars on the move as well?
Oh, we're hearing. Yeah, we've heard whispers. We've been hearing. We heard Brooks. Brooks went. I've heard Ricky. I've heard that one. We've heard all kinds of names. You know, I don't know if it's true. You can't, and it's very difficult to say, come out, which we are, but come out all the time and go, this is what I'm hearing. This is what I'm hearing. But then again, if you do say some names, and they come up and say, well, that's not true. I said, well, thanks very much for clearing that up. But some guys have said, I'm not going, and they've gone.
Yeah.
I don't know whether Liv hit a number, a certain number, and they go, right, I will give you that. And they go, well, I've got to take that. But everyone has their own circumstances. But, you know, there are whispers around Ricky and, you know, it's like we're going to see a lot after St Andrews. Mm. I think that's when it's going to happen, after the majors are out of the way, which is then. Then we go into the playoffs on the PGA Tour. And obviously the Liv guys can't play the playoffs. But much to some players' delight, I imagine. But It's going to be interesting after St Andrews, who goes to live and who stays on the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour, which announced yesterday an amazing thing, the alliance with the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour guaranteed for the next 13 years. 10 players will go each year over to the PGA Tour. That is outside the players that already exist there. It's an amazing carrot to be dangled for these young stars on the DP World Tour. We might see Americans actually come over here and start playing. We are going to see a serious turnover of players, and the players who are always just keeping their cards, you better get on that practice fairway, fellas, because I'm telling you right now, this is going to change now. The golf is going to be upped. The ante is going to be upped, and there's going to be a turner. If you're not that good, it's ta-da.
It is. You know, yeah, they've had a strategic alliance. It's now sort of a more formalised joint venture. Bigger purses, the PGA Tour have announced. You know, the guys have said, look, we've come out, we've formalised this a little bit more. It's not just in response to LIV. You know, this was always the plan anyway. And, Red, I know I always ask this question. We've talked about it, or talked about it last before we knew the field for Centurion. But given this new sort of partnership, or not new, but enhanced partnership between the DP and the PGA, and obviously the big names who have gone to LIV. How has that changed for you in terms of the landscape and how this might look in, you know, 1 year, 2 years' time?
This is just my opinion. If they want to live outside the PGA Tour dates-wise and the DP World Tour, it could be very awkward. There'll be a lot of banning. But maybe they can all get, you know, just maybe, I don't know, maybe they can all get together, work out dates so they all can coexist. I know, I hope, but because we're sick of this squabbling. Yeah. It's no good. People, we all need to get into bed together and do what's best for our game. Look, we've only been handed the baton. We are here in our lifetime to protect our game that our forefathers or foremothers have looked and done for our game. We're here to protect it and do the best for this game. This squabbling is doing no one any good.
I want to just pick up quickly before we move on. So something Patrick Reed said in the press conference ahead of Portland, he thinks shotgun start is a fairer test. So we don't have, say, the anomalies with the different sides of the draw, obviously different weather conditions. We've seen it quite often, you know, morning, late, early, the next, you know, weather vagaries, et cetera, et cetera. He thinks it's fairer because everybody's on the course at the same time. What did you make of that comment?
Yeah, well, I remember doing the Sixers up there at Centurion, funnily enough, years ago. And I said to my boss at Sky, I said, the best way to do this is do it shotgun. Yeah. So we all get out there. I don't mind the shotgun. I'm not big about the three rounds. How are we going to do three rounds? How are we going to get the fair world ranking points when the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour play four rounds? Mm. So you want the same amount of world ranking points and you only play three rounds? I'm not for that. But, you know, the shotgun, they'll be playing in shotgun underneath the No, but what do you think about the old shotgun?
I was waiting for that. I duck
under umbrellas.
I'm not going to break into songs. You don't need to worry about that. Yeah, I kind of agree with you, and I think Patrick had a point. I think how often have we been at events and you say, "Oh, we got the bad side of the draw," you know, it blowing a hoolie and pissed it down in the morning and it's beautiful in the afternoon. You know, it's, I'm with you. I think I kind of like the shotgun. I kind of think it makes sense.
Yeah. You can only have it with how many players they have, 48 or 40.
Yeah, exactly.
Do it like that. You can't do it with like what we are used to, the purest of the 154 players week in, week out. You're not doing it here at the Scottish Open, Irish, or the next week at the Scottish or the Open Championship. Yeah, well, it'll never happen in majors or anything like that. I'll go out and take your positions, boys. I'm going to fire the shotgun.
Getting your buggy or your getting your fan out to the 13th tee. But yeah, interesting. Look, we'll keep watching this space. Can I just say, by the way, you mentioned the Irish. I'm so jealous. You're sat in your beautiful Irish Open hotel, aren't you, right now doing this podcast? That, for me, over the years, has been one of my favourite events to cover. I love the Irish. I've never met a bad Irish man or bad Irish woman. They're just amazing. Yeah, it's always a great crack. I know you've had a couple of pints of Guinness already. You're in for a great week, aren't you?
Oh, it's brilliant. Yeah, you can see the Irish just absolutely love it. I was out there today, Pro-Am Day, and they were just, you can see their eyes, they smile all the time. They're looking at the stars. I'm just a little disappointed this week that there aren't more stars here. There's Seamus Power, and there's Shane Lowry, and all these changes that are going on in the world, I think we're going to look at a few dates as well that can help Rory come to the Irish. I know Rory wants to come to the Irish, but Rory has to do to prepare for the Open, the majors, and all that sort of stuff. So he's got his own way to do things. So, but you know, with the majors finishing now in July, the Open Championship, we're done with majors. We have got the season there, so that could open up a lot of stuff. And let's hope that happens.
Definitely. Look, we're going to get into our new quiz. Give me a clue who soon, but I just want to run through good, bad, and ugly, because there's been so much to talk about, so many highlights, a few lowlights as well. Can I just say, for me, the good, seeing Hao Tong Li win again on the DP World Tour was brilliant. You know, a guy who, we talk so much about the highs in sport and in golf, and we heard from Matt earlier, but this is a guy who nearly quit the game. He was that low and that despondent with the game of golf, nearly quit. And then to get his first win in 4 years, unbelievable, hold some ridiculous putts coming in and in the playoff against Thomas Peters. And that celebration, for me, I was crying watching it. You know, to see, quite often you don't see golf, quite often muted celebrations. To see him react like he did, I thought was fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely marvellous. And you're our presenter, one of our presenters, you and Nick. And you presenting, and you would have been on that green interviewing if you're there. What would you have done when he started dropping the F-bombs?
It's funny. Someone said, I don't know if you saw this on, I don't know if I put it on Twitter and Instagram. Do you remember that time when I interviewed Henrik at the US Open and he dropped an F-bomb? And someone sent it to me the other day, because it's US Open week. Someone said, oh, remember this TV gold when Henrik dropped the F-bomb live on air and I had to apologise about 50,000 times. So it's kind of in that moment. It wasn't, not just one, but two. And I'm like, how come? Come on, you're live on air. What are you doing? What would you have done? Would you have joined him?
Oh, I think I would have started. I think I would have probably apologised. I don't know. But, you know.
It's kind of contagious, though, isn't it? If someone says something, you get caught up in the emotion and you just, it was, I shouldn't say this, but it was funny.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, amazing for Hao Tong. Bad for me, I don't know if you've seen, did you see much of the KPMG, Lexi?
Till the end of it, she did another, it was the US Open in San Francisco last year,
basically, she was played the last 8 holes in 5 over. She was 2 up 3 to play last week. And I say this a lot. I think interviewed her quite a few times at the US Women's Open, and she's a superstar. She's been in the media spotlight since she was 14 years of age. She's lovely and endearing girl, great with the media, fans, gives all that time. She works her tail off. You see her on Instagram and social, she's in the gym grinding at the practice ground. Talk about hard workers with Matt earlier. She is relentless, and I'm heartbroken for her. Bogeyed 4 the last 7 holes. She's such a talent, and it's just painful to watch.
She doesn't look very good, Sarah, over those 4 footers.
No, she doesn't. She doesn't. Look, it's heartbreaking. And actually, we're going to have Suzanne Pettersen as one of our guests on the pod coming up. So join us for that. But we're going to talk a lot more about the women's game. And I do want to sort of pick her brains a little bit on Lexi. And just on that, good, bad and ugly, Justin Thomas was a little critical about the fact that they were put on the clock with 2 holes left to play. He said on social, look, read the room situation, all for cracking down on slow play. But, you know, a couple of holes left, they were put on the clock in a major. I kind of agree with him. I just thought that was a bit ugly. That's what's been sort of intriguing me over the last few weeks. All right, it is time for Give Me a Clue Who. Radar, I think you're 2-0 down in the series so far. We've both been a bit rubbish over the last couple of episodes. Are you ready to give it a good crack? This is where we guess the golfer based on a clue using their player bio on the tour's website. I've got good vibes for this one. So I've got my pen and paper ready of you.
1 second.
Organised as ever. So what we'll do, we'll go through the 5 questions and then we'll do the 5 answers at the end.
Okay, ready. Give me a clue who.
Right, number one. This punchy Aussie once won 204 bottles of whiskey for an ace.
What's it? Punchy Aussie whiskey.
204 bottles of whiskey for an ace.
Scott Henn.
No, you've got to write it down and we'll do it at the end. I think we know who he's going for. Happy Sturkers.
I'm just going to have a guess, a wild guess. Okay.
Number two. This player was previously known as Anujit Hurana Ratanakorn before changing his name for luck. He gave up car racing as it was too dangerous.
Say that because I just love the way you pronounced it.
Anujit Hurana Ratanakorn.
Have you got that radar?
Yep.
Have you really?
Well, I don't know, but I think I'm going to have a guess.
Right, number three. This 38-year-old still hasn't finished university after riding the wave of his golfing career up the professional ranks.
38-year-old?
Can you give us a clue which nationality he is?
Well, I've got a clue written down. That's what his degree is, and it's in business, economic, and business law.
Oh, I know what you've done there.
Yeah, he's tricked us with the wave.
Oh, I know who this is.
Do you?
Yeah. Hang on a sec. I'm getting confused with...
I have no idea there. None.
All right, let's go on to number four. This Ryder Cup star and multiple winner hasn't hit a professional golf shot in over 10 years, despite only being 37.
I know who this is. He was on social the other day, wasn't he?
I couldn't tell you.
Got him.
You got him?
Yep.
And finally, number five. This Great Dane celebrated in style after beating her boyfriend in one of the best golfing events of 2021.
This Great Dane. Red, I'm sorry. You're going down this month.
No idea. God, give us the answer.
So number one was this punchy Aussie once won 204 bottles of whiskey for an ace. Radar is the Aussie. You should get
in.
I went Leishman, didn't have a clue.
It's captain of the punch team on the Live Series, Wade Ormsby.
I wondered what punch he was all about.
Right.
I'm thinking about a little punch shot.
Right. Number two. Previously known as Anujit Hurana Ratanakorn, before changing his name for luck, gave up car racing as it was too dangerous. Sarah.
Pongchai Jaidee.
Radar.
Afi Barnrat.
It is Kiradesh Afi Barnrat.
Oh, it's between two of them. I didn't know Kiradesh was a racing driver.
He owns multiple Lamborghinis. Yeah.
Right, the third one, you can just have a crack at it. I'll have a crack too, but I got no idea.
This 38-year-old still hasn't finished university after riding the wave of his golfing career up the professional ranks. Ray up.
I really haven't got a clue. I've got no one. I don't know.
So I've got two. I know they're both surfers. But I don't know if the one I'm going to say, I think he might be a bit old. I can't call it.
Scotty's old.
Scotty, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, Scotty's 40. Yeah, I'll go Scotty.
Scott, yeah, but is it Will McKenzie then?
It is neither. It is Rafa Cabrera.
Oh, bollocks.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, he's a surfer.
So at the moment, it's 1-0 to Raider.
1-0 to Radar, soon to go 2.
So number four, this Ryder Cup star and multiple winner hasn't hit a professional golf shot in over 10 years, despite being just 37. Sarah, you thought you knew this.
I think I know it, AK.
Yep, me too. Anthony Kim.
Ooh. It is Anthony Kim.
Yep.
Yeah.
Retired 10 years ago this month.
And apparently isn't going to come back because he's on a massive insurance payout, isn't he? He never hit a golf ball in his life.
30 million.
Yeah.
I think Sturkers will get this one. This Great Dane celebrated in style after beating her boyfriend in one of the best golfing events of 2021. Radar.
Emily Pettersson.
Who?
So I'm taking it you have not got it then, Radar.
No, I haven't got a clue.
So she was, her boyfriend works for, Ollie works for Danielle Kang.
And Emily Pettersson holds the winning putt of Solheim.
Beating a boyfriend who was a caddy.
Well, he was still wearing the opposite team's colours.
You're a bastard.
So that was a tie, Radar.
It was a tie.
Oh, yeah.
I've not got a tiebreaker, unfortunately.
No, we don't want that. I'm happy with a tie.
You're happy to take your half point.
Brilliant. Love it.
Okay.
Well done, buddy. Well, listen, you have a great week at the Irish Open. I'm jealous. Looking forward to your posts on Instagram.
Cool.
And thanks to you all for listening. Been a great episode of Sturkers and Radar Uncut. Brilliant to have Matt with us. And don't forget, check us out on social, Sturkers Radar on Twitter, Sturkers and Radar Pod on Insta. Hope you've enjoyed it. Our monthly podcast brought to you by Ping.
Play your best. You know it makes sense.
This has been a Monkey Pants Productions podcast.